Empathy is not just a nicety. It is a connecting point in our society. The only time I will talk about the inauguration for 13 seconds, okay? Because after Bishop Marianne Budd delivered her powerful homily after Trump's inauguration service, tweets were posted like this, and I quote from Ben Garrett on Twitter, "Do not commit the sin of empathy. This snake," meaning the bishop, "is God's enemy and yours too. She hates God and his people. You need to properly hate in response. She is not merely deceived, but is a deceiver. Your eye shall not pity. So saith the gospel according to Ben." This is not the first time empathy was considered a sin. Joe Rigney wrote The Sin of Empathy, Compassion and Its Counterfeits back in 2019, and it warns against being too compassionate to others because they could take advantage of that kindness. That empathy, too much of it, not guided by the voice of a God that says the world is a dark and scary place, will lead you astray. I'm not going to dive in too deep here, but let's leave it that when Jesus is telling us to cast out our nets to fish for all those who are marginalized in the deepest of the deep, the furthest from love and hope that one can possibly be, and then someone says that that is sinful, I know that one of us is terribly mistaken. And I know it's not Jesus. So let's talk about why storytelling and empathy are a part of God's kingdom. After all, especially with this church, I'm not worried about anyone here intellectually knowing that caring about people is important, especially when we are in Black History Month. I know that we as a church, as a community, we know the stats and the numbers. We know the data before us. We know about racism in Canada and the U.S., especially around police brutality, discrimination in employment and schooling and healthcare, and the generational trauma of that impact on that centuries of bigotry has on both those who are oppressed and those who are descended from oppressors. Black History Month is not just about engaging in those numbers, it's about engaging in the stories. It's about engaging in our empathy. 13 years ago and change, I started dating my now husband, Greg. And I love many parts about him, but I think one of the best parts is the mother-in-law I got, Susan. I know not everyone will say that, and I stare at the ceiling. I know that mother-in-laws can be contentious, and that's okay, but as far as I go, I'm pretty fortunate. Susan has cared about stories for as long as I've known her. She writes everything. Journals, poetry, she wants everyone to write as well. You name it, write it down. Poetry, prose, whether it's good or bad, memoirs about your life, autobiographies, biographies, things that make sense, the fantastical, write it all down. She started a small nonprofit around this time, the Toronto Writers Collective, which over time became the Writers Collective of Canada. Susan's goal is simple. She asks people who have little experience writing their own stories to write it. Ta-da! Teaching them the basics of the writing craft, how to write in meter, what poetry can look like, how to write prose in a way that may express your thoughts far more easily than simply saying, write down an accurate account. Slowly, that writing becomes art. The participants of the Writers Collective are what makes it special. While anyone can participate, no person is too far removed or too marginalized or deemed too incapable of being able to share their story. She has worked with every group I could think of, from veterans, the recently incarcerated, the currently incarcerated, people living on the streets, people in rehab, people in the sex trade, people in shelters, everyone that she could possibly reach. She has done a workshop. She's done a workshop here at Soul Table years ago. People who have few chances to share their own stories in their own words on their own terms, now get the opportunity to do so. And while not everything is going to win a Pulitzer, it doesn't have to. They touch the soul. Storytelling is an ancient craft. It is as old as us communicating with each other. From the moment we were able to share complex emotions and concepts, we dove into sharing stories. Whether it was to pass the time, because the night gets awfully long, whether it's to share our origins and where we come from, creating myth as well, or to explain the nuances of humanity, what happens when we die, why must we love, why is there hatred, storytelling becomes part of the human condition. It is why Jesus is shown so frequently giving parables, because not everyone here remembers anything from the book of Numbers, which is a text about the data and the important details around how many cubits need to be built and how many cows are involved. No one here remembers that. But the story of the mustard seed, or Jesus telling people to go forth and take care of each other with stories and parables about farmers and fish and trees and birds. Ah, we remember those. Slowly but carefully, these stories become part of our nature. In another class I'm in, Mary McCampbell's Imagining Our Neighbors as Ourselves is a really, really good book, and it's a very accessible book if anyone's looking for something that's not too dry. She explores how books and films from across the past 60 years in Canada and the U.S. deepen our sense of humanity, and they help us foster empathy. Empathy is not sympathy. It's not pity. And to be fair, I have spent 2 degrees in 6 years trying to get to the difference, and I'm still working on it. But as Brené Brown says, empathy and sympathy are when you go to someone and you see them suffering in the hole. And sympathy is when you look at them and you say, oh, that must be really sad. And you may help, but then you go away. Empathy is when you jump in the hole with the person. You feel their pain, you feel their suffering, you feel their sorrow. And when we get out of that hole, we feel their joy. Their joy is our joy. Their love is our love, their hope is our hope. Empathy is how we connect with each other. As opposed to saying, oh, them over there, we say, us, all here. And I'm going to be honest, empathy can be bloody exhausting. It is. McCampbell and my mother-in-law both know that empathy is not something that can just be checked off. I can't put on my resume, I reached a level 5 in empathy, and that I have now a license to empathize. It doesn't work that way. Empathy is a muscle. It's a habit. It's one that we slowly build up. The instinct to care about people is there since we are born, but it takes time to build that up, much like how the instinct to breathe, to talk, to eat, that is all there when we're born. But ask anyone with a newborn right now, that takes a little bit of work to refine, takes a little bit of work to grow. Same with empathy, but the hope and skill to care for others and see them as ourselves. When our worldview is small, when we are very young, or maybe if we grow up in a place where everyone looks and talks and thinks the same as us, we have empathy, but it needs to be stretched. When our brain says, I need to care about this person who looks nothing like me, I can do it. But it's going to take a lot more work to stretch my brain to get there. And so we find ways of expressing and growing our empathy. We do so with stories, with people that don't think or look or live like us, and spend time thinking about what it's like to be them. what it's like to go through what they've gone through, what it's like to have to deal with the trauma or the pain, or to celebrate the joy and love and laughter. Finding these stories, reading them, watching them, knowing them, stretches that empathy muscle a little bit, makes it easier to jump across from community to community to care. Not because we don't want to, but because it takes time. That's simply it. It requires being willing to put on our shoes, to walk a little bit, find someone with different shoes and try them on and walk around a little bit more. I want you to think about the last time you were able to share a vulnerable story of yours. Sometime that you were able to share either heartbreak or something very, very precious to someone else, to a family member or a friend. Maybe it was your therapist, maybe a teacher, a neighbor, maybe a bartender. What was it like to share that story and have it received? For someone to say, I see you, I hear you. You went through a lot. What was that feeling like? Let's flip it around. The last time someone shared with you a story, a bit about themselves, whether it was heartbreak or joy, something that you felt was so vulnerable and so precious, it was a fragile glass that they put in your hand. And you realize, holy crow, this person trusts me a lot. What was that feeling like? To know that someone wanted to share this with you. That feeling is where Christ is. That feeling is where the Spirit is. Whether it is us sharing ourselves or us receiving something vulnerable, being able to access that part in our heart that says, oh, this person just gave me something beautiful. Or this person let me give them something beautiful. Not pretty, but maybe precious and important. This is where our empathy is stretched and grown. No wonder it's exhausting. We are living in a world where empathy is needed more than ever, where we need to be able to see each other not just as a person, a cardboard cutout, a shadow against the wall, but as someone with a full story of dignity, of hope, of pain, that they have been through a lot, that we have been through a lot, that we are simply groups of humans trying to engage with all of that complexity. Because it is so much easier to think that everyone is simply a shadow against the wall. It is so much easier to pass policies, to not care as much, to think that their loss is not as big or important or special. But to be able to see each other as a full, complete human, to know their story, suddenly caring gets a whole lot easier. And it gets a whole lot easier to say we, as a society, must care for each other. In the short run, it's easy enough to say I'm going to not care or worry or I'm going to move on. But in the long run, for all of us, it's worth it to sit with each of those stories, to grow our empathy a little more, and to say now that we care, what will we do with it? To be willing to encounter people who are far beyond ourselves, to hear their stories and to know their pain and joy, their love and their fear, that is when we see Christ in others and others see Christ in us. This is the importance of months like Black History Month, along with Asian History Month and Indigenous History Month and Pride Month and all of the commemorative calendar points. They're not there so that we could check them off and say, ah, yes, we are good. We're good to go. It's not to grandstand and it's not to wallow. It is because there are times when we stretch out those empathy muscles. There are times we grow just a little bit further. Those times we grow a little bit kinder. Just like every Christian holiday is a chance for us to see Christ, these commemorative times are a chance to see Christ in others, and for others to see Christ in us. We are being asked to cast wide nets for people, to go fishing. Let's fish with empathy. Let's cast nets of empathy out and say to everyone, I want to hear your story. And if you'd like, I'd like to share mine. And together, we will see Christ in each other. May it be so. Amen.